Up next, it's a small world after all, maybe. What do Karl Rove and Katie Holmes have in common? Well, Karl Rove worked with Vice President Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney is also Senate president, so he would know former Senator John Edwards. Kevin Bacon's band performed in an Edwards fundraiser. Kevin Bacon was in a movie called A Few Good Men, a movie that starred Tom Cruise, and Tom Cruise is married to Katie Holmes. There, we've done it. So there you have it. Rove to Cheney to Edwards to Bacon to Cruise to Holmes in less than six steps. That little exercise comes courtesy of Stanley Milgram. Milgram was a sociologist in the 1960s. He did an experiment to find out how many steps it would take to link together any two people selected at random. It turned out the number was six. Since Milgram's initial report in the first issue of Psychology Today, the notion that we're all separated by 6 degrees has become part of our common popular culture. But one of my guests today says Milgram's work doesn't hold up under scrutiny, that his research doesn't show what it purported it did, what he purported it did. That story is featured in this month's Discover magazine. Let me introduce my guests. First, Judith Kleinfeld is director of Northern Studies and professor of psychology at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She joins us by phone. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Kleinfeld.
Thank you.
And also we have Stephen Strogatz. He's the Jacob Gould Schurman Professor of Applied Mathematics at Cornell University in Ithaca. He joins us from a studio on campus. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Strogatz.
Thanks very much, Joe.
And if you want to talk about our topic and get more information, first of all, you can call us at 800-989-8255 or 800-989-TALK or go over to sciencefriday.com where you'll find more information about what we'll be talking about. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. So, Dr. Kleinfeld, let me start with you and ask you, what was the experiment that Milgram did and what was he intending to show?
Start out with the first one he did, because that was the one that got all the publicity, and it was published in 1967 in Psychology Today. And the question he was asking was, let's select two people at random anywhere in the world, and how many people are needed to connect a chain between them? Now, this had long been an entertaining parlor game among mathematics professors and mathematicians, but we just had no empirical evidence. And Milgram was just a brilliant social scientist. He gave us the study obedience to authority and just all kinds of imaginative work. So this was a really imaginative test, and he figured he would test it. So living in Cambridge, he tried to select someone who was very, very distant. And that was Kansas, you know, flyover country. So he asked starters, people he had found in Kansas, and asked them to reach a young woman called Alice in Cambridge. And the idea was that starters had to send a letter in the mail to someone they knew on a first-name basis, and that person would send it to someone that he or she knew. And the question was, how many intermediaries would it take to get it across? So this is an empirical test. Let's use real people in the real world. And the anecdote that he started the article with was just amazing. One person got it through in only 4 days. A wheat farmer sent it to his minister, who sent it to a minister in Cambridge, who handed it to Alice on the street. And she thought the letter had gone astray. So she turned it in, and it hadn't. It had just gotten 4 days to get there.
Wow.
So Milgram thought, you know, that just like the example you gave, Joe, that this was good evidence that we're, in fact, all connected.
Right. But, in fact, there were only a few of these letters that actually made it through. Is that right?
Yeah. When I went into the Yale archives, and I want you to understand that.
That's where Milgram left his papers, I take it.
Yeah. They were in boxes, I think, 48 and 49, and it's fun to go into an archive. You get to wear white gloves, and you see all the correspondence, and you really get a sense of what the person is like. And Milgram was very careful. Very, very nice work, all well filed. And he was one of my great heroes.
Dr. Kleinfeld, I started you on a long story, and I did it at the end of a short pier because we have to take a short break right now. But we'll come back, we'll hear the end of this, and then we'll hear from Dr. Strogatz about some of the issues that are raised by this experiment and what they mean. But so stick with us. We'll be right back. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. We're talking this hour about 6 degrees of separation. My guests are Judith Kleinfeld, Director of Northern Studies and Professor of Psychology at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and Stephen Strogatz is a professor of applied mathematics at Cornell University. So we were talking before the break about this experiment where Milgram had letters that were supposed to go out and attach, you know, people from that had no connection with each other. How many steps did it take? Dr. Kleinfeld, you went to Yale where Dr. Milgram's papers are. You looked through the archives, and as I gather it, you found that if you look at the entirety of what he did, which is send out, most of the time nothing happened. I mean, the letters went out and they never came back. And so the 6 degrees, the average of 6, comes from only the small set of letters that did get delivered. Is that right?
Basically, yes. 95% of, I calculated, of the letters never got through.
Okay. So, Dr. Strogatz, turning to you, does that mean that this whole notion of 6 degrees of separation is you know, folk wisdom and based on faulty science?
Definitely not. It's really solid. And it's true that in this first study, which you could regard as a pilot study, the study that began with starters in Kansas, it's true only 3 of the 60 starters were able to get their letters through. But I think we should keep in mind a few things. First, there's a tendency, for example, this Discover magazine article, right on the cover, it refers to what it calls the 6 degrees scam. And I think that's a really bad and misleading word to use because there's a kind of insinuation that Milgram was somehow being deceptive, and that's absolutely not true. If you were to look at the article that Professor Kleinfeld has just mentioned from Psychology Today, Milgram says, just a few paragraphs after telling the dramatic story about the divinity student in Cambridge, he points out that of 160 chains that were started in a later study in Nebraska, 44 were completed and 126 dropped out. As a math professor, I do have to notice that 126 plus 44 doesn't add up to 160. But okay, but leaving that aside, he does say, you know, it's applied math, but he does certainly say clearly enough that only 44 out of 160 got through. So from the very start, Milgram recognized that this was a problematic aspect of his experiment. He even writes that, you know, of the ones that did get through, they could give us the illusion that the chains are shorter than they really are. And so the real question is, what's going on when these letters don't make it to their target? Is it, for instance, that the people in the chain couldn't think of any way to get the letter to the target? That's one interpretation. A different interpretation is people are receiving a letter and they're not as motivated to play this game as the person who sent them the letter, or they're too busy, or for whatever reason they don't want to cooperate. And so I tend to believe, and Milgram himself believed, although it's an open scientific question, as Professor Kleinfeld has pointed out in her own articles, we should try to understand the psychology of why it is that people in these experiments don't continue to, some don't participate. But I don't happen to think that really impugns Milgram's research for reasons that I could describe that don't exactly have to do with psychology, but maybe I'll let you make your point there.
Well, no,
or comment.
No, that's all right. I mean, I was only going to encourage our listeners to join this conversation, 800-989-8255. And yes, I do. I'll throw it back to you, Dr. Kleinfeld. Are you saying that Milgram was trying to mislead people? Or are you just saying that he overinterpreted his results to make them seem more interesting than they were?
I don't think he was trying to mislead people at all. I have tremendous respect for Milgram. But people get excited about their findings, and they tend to use anecdotes to start things off, which are really vivid and memorable, what we know from cognitive science research. So I think it was the anecdotes that got into people's imaginations and not the statistics. I think Steve and I would actually come to different numbers. But as I go through this work, it's very hard to figure out exactly how many chains got started and how many got completed.
Well, here's the point that I want to make more globally that I think is interesting. It seems to me that you started off, Dr. Kleinfeld, by saying that the question of theoretically how many links it would take to reach somebody was a sort of a mathematical one. And here's and Stanley Milgram tried to answer it empirically. But I wonder if they're not really two separate questions. It seems to me that's what you're hinting at, Dr. Strogatz. If you simply ask the question, how many people does a give, you know, take an average number of people that someone would know, if it's 10 or 50 or 100, I don't know. How big of a universe, if those 50 people knew 50 people, would it take to reach the entire planet?
Very good. Yes, that's the kind of calculation that got this line of research started. Some researchers before Milgram asked something just like you did, that if each person knows, say, 100 people, and then each of them knows 100, then within two steps there's 100 times 100, which would be already 10,000, and so on. And by that line of thinking, you would imagine that the world is very small, except for thinking just another second longer, you realize that calculation is wrong because of my 100 friends, a lot of them know each other, so it's not a fresh new 100 at each stage. There's a lot of inbreeding.
Mm-hmm.
And so Milgram set out to get around that tangle with this beautiful experiment that he designed. But actually, I would like to comment or react to something you just said a second ago, that there may be two questions here. There's actually three questions here that it would be helpful for all of us to try to distinguish among. The first question is, given two people, is there a short path connecting them? That is a question of existence. Does a chain exist? A second question has to do with search. Can people find these short paths if they exist? And a third question is, even if the paths did exist and people could find them, could they use them to exert any influence on a person at the distant end? And those are really all very different questions, and I feel we know a fair amount about all three, actually. That is, I can tell you as a mathematical virtual certainty that short paths do exist. In that sense, it absolutely is a small world, and I'd be prepared to have quite a discussion with Professor Kleinfeld about this. The second question is, can people find them? Yes, when they're motivated, they can. And Milgram's experiment and later experiments by Duncan Watts and his colleagues at Columbia showed that. Can we use them to do anything? Like the Discover magazine article posed the question this way, if we're only 6 degrees from Osama bin Laden, why can't we find him? Well, that's because the people in the chain at the very end close to Osama don't want to cooperate for obvious reasons.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, and even if I'm 6 handshakes from the president, I can't influence him and he's not going to invite me to lunch, obviously. So, well,
maybe not. You don't know. The president might find you very endearing.
Maybe if he's listening. I know he's a science buff.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, well, let's open up the phones now and see what some of our listeners have to say. And first, let's go to, is it Joanne in Portland, Oregon?
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Thanks.
What's your question?
My question is, what importance does this really have for science? It seems like a lot of silliness. Who cares whether a person who acted in a movie is 6 degrees from the vice president? It's not very interesting.
Well, but okay.
Both of us would like a stab at that.
Yes,
one.
Okay. Well, why don't
feel free?
Why don't we give Judith Kleinfeld a because you've actually asked this empirically as well. I mean, not to follow up even on some of Dr. Milgram's work.
I think that Steve and his colleagues have just done wonderful work about disease transmission, for example, and how diseases will spread through networks. That gets around the search strategy problem. And I'm sure that he could give many other examples where this is important. As a psychologist, I'm curious about why people want to believe this so much. What is it about the world that makes people just grab onto this? Plays, movies, websites, and so forth.
Hmm. Well, it certainly has captured popular imagination. But, you know, it's funny. I mean, I've read that you've said that people feel inclined to believe this. But as we just heard from, our caller, there's people who think it's just silly. And there's other people who just sort of it just seems an observable thing that you – I don't feel particularly attached to it. But maybe, Dr. Strogatz, you have some thoughts about that.
Well, I would like to respond to this caller's excellent question. It certainly does seem to be frivolous, when you hear about the Kevin Bacon game. Or some years ago, there was 6 degrees of Monica. So there are a lot of reasons to be interested in this. And let me put it this way. It's that this kind of property, the 6 degrees property, is a sort of universal architecture in the world around us and in our own bodies. For example, if you were to look at the network of chemical reactions that control whether a cell will go cancerous or not, the topic of in the previous segment, that network of interacting reactions has been now looked at and mapped out and found to be a small world. That is, every biochemical involved in these sorts of cellular reactions is just a few chemical reactions away from every other chemical. Or if you were to look at the human genome, or for instance, the nervous system, the human brain, every cell is just a few synapses away from every other. So we see this sort of architecture, this gorgeous use of the small world property in the national power grid, in the internet, in the human brain, and in the genome. It's a ubiquitous architecture that allows for rapid spreading of information, global coordination of all sorts of activities, and sometimes unwanted effects like computer viruses that can spread very rapidly through the whole Internet.
Okay, let's take another call now and go to Joseph in Sierra Vista, Arizona. Welcome to the Science Friday.
Thank you. We have, having been in law enforcement, having retired from them, having also retired from intelligence services, we have similar programs in trying to locate people. But our impetus was that we set out a particular set of information and tracked it and see who would spread that information and then find out where we have an avenue by where we might be able to locate someone. And to that extent, some of that still is used now. My question is, had any research been done recently or even a while back that would indicate that there is an actual link if you follow it? Any research from the law enforcement capacity?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Joseph. Dr. Strogatz, do you know about that at all? I've actually heard a little bit about research in the social network analysis to track people down.
I know that there have been studies about terrorist groups using sort of connecting the dot technology, thinking about network theory in the service of that sort of thing. And I was once contacted by what seemed like a sort of ominous phone call that said, call back the FBI crime lab right away. I was surprised when I called back and the person at the other end picked up and said, hair and fiber. So anyway, I had reached the hair and fiber department, and it turned out that a crime lab scientist there was interested, having heard about this idea of 6 degrees in so many kinds of networks. Could he, in his work, use the idea that, you know, for instance, when a fiber is found that matches some article of clothing that the victim was wearing, and that fiber is found on the suspect's sweatshirt, you know, can that be used in a sort of legal setting to prove that there was some connection? The defense attorney will say, well, how many of those sweaters were manufactured each year? It could be secondary transfer of fibers. The short answer is, it seems like there are tantalizing possibilities for the use of this in law enforcement, but I'm not aware of really clear-cut examples of it.
We're talking this hour about the question of whether the notion that we're all separated from one another by 6 degrees is a real one, and if it's real, is it important? And if it's important, can it be used for anything? I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Dr. Kleinfeld, I want to come back to you. You were saying that this notion, this idea of 6 degrees of separation appeals to us at a psychological level. Can you expand a little bit more on that?
I've been very curious as to why this has slipped into the popular culture. And as I interviewed people, and this was done informally, this wasn't done as a piece of serious scientific research, I was just curious why they wanted to believe this so much. And the kinds of responses that I got were that it gave people a sense of security, interconnectedness. We're all holding hands. And another reason was fate or God's design. I got that from religious people, that they wanted to believe that people were responsible for each other. We're our brother's keeper. And then the other reason had to do with, I think, a poor understanding of coincidence, because, again, they were asking a different question. And this is a little bit different from the one that Steve so nicely put. But they were not asking if two people selected at random or one person selected at random could reach a person anywhere on the globe. What they were actually thinking about was, what's the possibility that I will run into someone from my past or someone who knows someone from my past? And they were all shocked and really delighted at those. So they were asking a different question, and it was about coincidence.
Interesting. Let's take another call now from Jennifer in Norman, Oklahoma. Jennifer, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just recently, as a matter of fact, just this week, I'm a little behind the times technologically speaking, I guess, but I was just introduced this week to a website called Facebook. And I was thinking about this very subject when I discovered that this is a site where people, you figure out who your friends are, and then you show on your site who your friends are, and then you can see who your friends are. And so I was curious to know if this may have any, this may perhaps be like a real-world test along the lines of what the original researcher was trying to do of actually being able to see people who are linked to someone else and so on. And
Interesting question. Dr. Strogatz, you do get to explore these links sometimes using web tools like Facebook, I suppose, and LinkedIn. That's another one I've heard of where these social networking tools.
Yeah, these are wonderful new sort of test beds, arenas where we could conduct a kind of social science that was more difficult before the advent of these online social networks. So they could be a wonderful research tool, and I think there are people who are looking into this.
I wonder, though, if there's not a similar selection bias problem, or is there enough people who are on the Internet and learning about things like Facebook that you can pretty much assume that you're getting an accurate picture of the society that we live in at this point? Dr. Kleinfeld, why don't you go ahead? You're the psychological researcher.
Sure. I think there's an obvious selection bias as to who puts up sites on Facebook. And if you look real carefully at the early studies, what you found was that it's very easy to get messages through among people who are really well-connected, like people at a university or people in scientific circles. But it's much more difficult to get messages through from one racial group to another, or among low-income people to high-income people, although high-income people can more easily reach low-income people. So I think these are absolutely fascinating experiments. But we just have to keep in mind that they relate to a certain age group and a certain group who uses the Internet.
Okay, I think I've just figured it out. What you have, you see, is there's about 10 people who know everyone on the planet. And then there's like the rest of us who know a few people. And when you average out the number of connections, it comes out to 6.
That's not my true. Theory.
All right. I'm sorry. It was a silly idea, but it's where we have to leave it because we've run out of time. So thank my guests very much this hour. Judith Kleinfeld is Director of Northern Studies and Professor of Psychology at University of Alaska Fairbanks. And Stephen Strogatz is a Professor of Applied Mathematics at Cornell University. Thank you both very much for joining me today.
It was a delight. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarian Key Molesky. If you have comments or questions or a joke about climate change you want to share with us, write to us at Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, Room 306, New York, New York, 10036. You can also email us. That address is scifry@npr.org. Check out sciencefriday.com for more information and links to today's program. You can listen to past editions of Science Friday online or take them with you as a podcast. And check out Science Friday's Kids Connection free curriculum material for teaching science using Science Friday. Just click on the teacher's link on sciencefriday.com. Ira Flato will be back next week for NPR News in New York. I'm Joe Palca.